This sermon series takes lessons from the life of Joseph. There are many parallels between his life and the ministry of Jesus, and therefore between his life and ours as followers of Jesus. It is entitled, Finding Purpose When Life Doesn't Make Sense. This audio session is meant for your preparation only, not for any other use. Remember to add your personal illustrations and stories as you think best. Or have a look at the transcripts for suggested places for illustrations. Please remember to report back once you have preached between 4 to 6 sermons. Pastor, we are grateful and pleased that you are part of this pastor's circle and that you are going to preach for life change.
Moving forward with God, Joseph and his heart. God is able to heal and restore years of pain and discouragement. We should guard our hearts and choose to forgive so that he is glorified in both our adversity and abundance. Life is hard, and there are many times when we are unable to explain all that we go through and have to endure. Joseph had to endure many difficulties throughout his life, yet his responses reveal that his perspectives on life and God enabled him to respond in ways that were helpful and that would lead him forward. Joseph teaches us that when we are able to anchor ourselves to the reality of God's goodness, no matter what happens to us, we will have passed one of the most significant tests of our lives. Firstly, we see that God carries us through tough times. Joseph, although he had a tough life and endured much adversity, chose not to be a victim. He rose above despair. He did not allow his experiences to distort his view of God or his trust in God. At this point in his life, Joseph has been through so much. He is still a relatively young man when he's rejected and betrayed by his brothers. He gets sold into slavery. He works hard for Potiphar, but then is falsely accused by Potiphar's wife. He's unjustly imprisoned. But what does Joseph do in prison? He works hard and makes the best of the situation, and pretty soon he's trusted by the warden. He interprets the dreams of the cupbearer and is promised that he will not be forgotten, but then he is forgotten for 2 years by the same cupbearer. For so many of us, just one of those things would be enough to make us bitter against people, maybe even bitter against God. And yet the surprising thing about Joseph is that his love, his devotion, and even his trust in God don't fade away. It is his love and devotion which carries him through all these difficult challenges. Through all this adversity, he manages to keep his trust in God. He demonstrates that in the midst of most difficulties, we are called to obey rather than to understand. And as we go on to see, God is shaping and molding him throughout this time. When you think of Joseph's life as a chart, you would initially expect to see a straight line all the way from the giving of his dream at a young age to the fulfillment of the dream. Maybe our expectation is that this is how God should work in our own lives, right? Instead, what we see is more of a zigzag. God, it seems, rarely takes any of us from point A to point B in the most direct and efficient route. Life is filled with purposeful and planned detours because God is more interested in developing our character than fulfilling our dream. Our destination is not God's only concern. He wants to develop our character so that we are prepared for the destination. This is certainly evident in Joseph's life, and it's also true for you and me. Eventually, Joseph is serving under Pharaoh, and now it looks like finally his life is getting better. Now at last, Joseph is the one with all the power and authority. He's the number two guy in Egypt. Now finally, he is the one in control. But how will he react? What about the past? Joseph's heart has been wounded deeply over the years. What condition is his heart in now? How would you handle your heart against those who have imposed so much on you? He seems to have almost moved on beyond all that. He is successful in living royally. But it has been said, it takes a steady hand to carry a full cup. Joseph's cup of responsibility is very full. He looks steady on the outside, but is he steady on the inside? What about his heart? What is his heart towards God and others? To quote a friend, there are many who can handle adversity, but there are few who can handle abundance. Let's see how Joseph does. Can he handle success as well as he did the sacrifices that it took him to get there? Secondly, both prosperity and difficulty test the strength of our character. We pick up the story of Joseph at the end of Genesis 41 when the famine is in full force. Joseph is about to experience that both difficulties and success test our character and commitment to the Lord. As you will come to see during the season of his life, while things are good, he faces a whole new set of temptations. How should he deal with, and why should he care about those who have rejected and hurt him? How should he use his power? We tend to forget that this can be a problem. He has the opportunity, if he wants, to pay his brothers back for the wrongs they have done to him. You see, when things are going well and we prosper, we can be tempted to sin and abuse our power, and this is not pleasing to God. Thankfully, Joseph chooses to use the power and authority that he has for God's glory and not for his own purposes. Joseph's heart has been deeply wounded over and over, yet in times of blessing, as we will see, he still chooses the right path. Let's continue with the story. The famine is severe all over the world, including in Canaan. Jacob, Joseph's father, hears that there is grain in Egypt and sends his son there to buy food for the family. And when they arrive in Egypt, they present themselves to the governor, who is their brother Joseph, but they don't recognize him. Out of respect, they bow down to him, and in the process of that bowing, they fulfill the dream that God had given Joseph so long ago as a young man. But Joseph recognizes them, and what an emotional day this must have been for him. Right away, he knew who they were, but he pretends to be a stranger. He speaks to them harshly. It's the same word that is used of how they used to speak to him. They refused to say a kind word to him. Now he speaks with them with harsh words and a harsh tone. But they still haven't recognized him. And as he questions them, the brothers try to convince Joseph that they are honest men. That's ironic. Genesis 42:13 says that they answer Joseph, "Your servants were 12 brothers, the sons of one man who lives in the land of Canaan. The youngest is now with our father, and one is no more." It's interesting how they say that one of their brothers is no more. Had they told their story so often that it just flows out of their mouths so easily? Do we see any signs that they've changed over the years? Joseph decides to test their character. He keeps one of the brothers in prison in Egypt, and he sends the rest of them back to Canaan to take food back to sustain their families. But he also says, "Now when you come back to Egypt, bring your youngest brother to me. I want to see Benjamin." Remember, Joseph and Benjamin shared the same mother, Rachel, and would likely have had a closer bond. And Joseph is wondering during all this, will they come back for their brother who is left behind in prison? And is Benjamin even still alive? Are these brothers the same men who betrayed him and sold him into slavery? And so as the story continues to play out, the brothers believe deep in their hearts that they were being punished by God because of how they had treated Joseph. They know that it will break Jacob's heart to have Benjamin leave him as well. They've been carrying their guilt. Guilt immobilizes, and it makes it very difficult to move on. It actually makes us more inclined to make the same mistakes over again, because we're so fixated on those past mistakes that we fail to apply the lessons we've learned. Genesis 42-47 shows us how Joseph continues to test the hearts, integrity, and even the remorse of his brothers in various ways. And as he does this, he's looking to see, is there any change in them? God was able to change his heart, but were his brothers any different? In fact, there are some changes. It's interesting to see how protective the brothers now are of Benjamin. In fact, there's a time when it looks like Benjamin's life may be at risk, and one of the brothers steps up and says, "No, take my life, not his." Certainly, this is out of love and respect for their father, Jacob. But it also shows us that the brothers are changing. There is finally a hint of remorse in their character. During this time of testing, Joseph may also be giving himself time to make up his mind, time to think through how he should react to those who've caused so much pain in his life. He has suffered through years of prison and slavery because of their actions. How should he respond? Has God delivered his wicked brothers to him? Should he enact the judgment they rightly deserve? Perhaps Joseph is struggling just as we would. If you have struggled to forgive, so did Joseph. And just as Joseph had to decide how to respond, so will you at some point. Thirdly, we see that life may be uncertain, but God's promises and plan are sure. Again, there is no way Joseph could ever have imagined what would happen during the famine and the ways in which God would restore the years that were lost to him. It is a time of famine, but God was working at bringing in a harvest and renewal of a different kind. The brothers go back to Canaan, and they do return with Benjamin. They bring him down to Joseph, and there's a reunion that takes place here. Note that when the brothers return to Egypt with Benjamin, they actually bow down to Joseph two more times. Interestingly, this is now three times in total that his brothers have bowed in Joseph's presence. Finally, the dream that first got Joseph into trouble with his brothers has been fulfilled. And when God fulfills a promise, he sometimes goes way over the top. The text also goes on to tell us that when Joseph saw Benjamin, he was deeply moved. In fact, he was so deeply moved that he had to leave the room and weep in private. This is important to note. We are reminded again that God cares more about the development of the dreamer than the fulfillment of the dream. God has been developing Joseph's character through his divinely designed detours, so that by the time he got to the destination, the fulfillment of the dream, he was ready. Joseph's heart is in the right place, and God does the same with you and me. Joseph finally composes himself. He washes his face, pulls himself together, and returns to his brothers. At this point, he can't handle it anymore, and so he reveals his true identity to them, and he weeps loudly. He is again totally overcome with emotion. I like the way that he says it. He says, "I'm Joseph. I'm your brother, you know, the one you sold to Egypt." And then he asks about his father. Is Jacob still alive? As you could imagine, his brothers cannot even answer because they're absolutely terrified and overwhelmed with guilt at this point. Joseph was now in a position of power over his brothers, the men who had chosen to exercise control over his destiny years before. Joseph had to choose how to respond to them. And he has made his decision. He tells them not to be distressed. He says it was really God that had him sent to Egypt ahead of them. And because God sent Joseph to Egypt, many lives were saved during the famine. Egyptian lives, yes, but also those of his own covenant people. Joseph had many reasons to blame many people and even God for his years of adversity and misfortune. Instead, he sees that it was all part of God's plan. And not only that, he sees that it was a good plan. It is amazing to see how Joseph comes to this conclusion and shares it with his brothers, whom he could so easily punish for their deeds. Joseph embraces this opportunity for renewal and change. Instead of spiraling out of control and enacting revenge, Joseph comes through this with his heart, his character, and his relationship with God and others intact. He then sends his brothers back to get their father and bring him to Egypt. He promises to give them everything they need. He kisses his brothers and weeps over them. What an ending to this section of the story. Outside of the grace of God, it could have ended very differently. Genesis 47:11 says that Joseph settled his father and his brothers in Egypt. He gave them property in the best part of the land, and he gave them everything that they needed to ride out the famine. Joseph's heart for God and his family survives all he has experienced. He graduates from the school of suffering. I don't think it was easy. Sometimes it seems like Joseph automatically did the right thing, without ever having to think about it. But the Bible makes it clear that he had very raw emotions and that he struggled. Maybe he struggled with revenge. He struggled with forgiveness. But that is what he chooses. He chooses to forgive. And it's not about whether that forgiveness is deserved. Joseph's brothers certainly didn't deserve it. Joseph chooses to forgive rather than enacting the judgment and punishment that he has the authority to carry out. Does it maybe help to remember? It is God who allows and uses our detours. In essence, Joseph decides how to guide his heart. He chooses how he will respond. Is it possible that our greatest failings in times of distress come because we follow our fallen heart, rather than purposefully choosing how we will respond? Joseph chooses to use his power, the control that he has, for God's glory, not for his own purposes. He chose to glorify God during his years of adversity, and now he chooses the same in his abundance. Despite our circumstances, good or bad, godly character is still profitable. This beckons the question, am I willing to keep going forward with God, to move on beyond the rejection, beyond the pain, beyond the betrayal, or will I get stuck in the past? Will I grant forgiveness and seek reconciliation where it is needed? Will I guard my heart and choose my response? Will I somehow find a way, like Joseph, to move beyond the pain and keep living for today and looking to tomorrow, trusting through it all that God has prepared for me for this, and that God does have a plan?